Welcome to the We've All Done It podcast. If you are struggling with some toxic work BS, you, my friend, are in the right place. Office politics are hard, and sometimes we are the fun in dysfunction. I am Kimberly Benoit, your host and author of We've All Done It, getting real about the role we each play in a toxic workplace. With over 20 years of leadership experience, and yes, my own toxic missteps, I will be joined by leaders just like you and I to explore common leadership situations that every leader finds themselves in at some point in their career. We discuss lessons learned in a judgment-free space, because no matter how it feels, we aren't alone in our struggles. We all have our own BS, and we can support and learn from each other. All right, welcome to the latest episode of We've All Done It. I am really excited for our guest today. And we're just going to jump right in. So today we have Reggie Johnson with us. So Mr. Johnson, please tell us about yourself.
That's an amazing intro right there. I like the Mr. Johnson. I could probably just cut that out the show and just play that back for myself, you know, over and over again in my down times. My name is Reggie Johnson. I do a show called Reggie and ATL. It's a podcast that I started in 2018. I used to do radio in Mississippi before that, Star 92.3. Whoop, and whoop. It was pretty good. It was a smaller market though. It wasn't like a big city situation. It's like maybe 50,000 people or so. It wasn't crazy, but it was a nice experience. I came back to Atlanta and I wanted to get back into that. And a friend of mine recommended I do podcasting because he felt like terrestrial radio was kind of like a dying thing, and he was like, you should try to get into podcasting. I was like, all right, cool. So I started a show called Reggie and ATL, and I also manage events as well, which is very fun because they're two very different things, you know. Doing podcasts, you get the chance to talk to all kinds of people, Kimberly, as you know, from all over, and that's amazing. And doing events, it's similar, but it's just in person. It's, you know, thousands of people that you're around all the time. A nightmare to some, but very, very cool to me. I really like doing it.
So it's very interesting because you're not alluding to it. You're kind of hinting at the fact that in your managing of these events, you actually have a leadership role, and podcasting is a leadership role too, but it's a little bit different than when, to your point, when you're managing events with hundreds, if not thousands of people, and there's a lot of expectation there. You know, you have talked to me about the fact that you have a tremendous passion for do as I say versus do as I do leadership. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, I think that just comes from people in my past. You know, when I was not in a leadership role, I would look at managers who did things I liked and felt like when I did get into a leadership role one day, I would kind of take that and look at things I didn't like. And one of the things I really didn't like was managers who would say that you should do certain things, but they didn't really kind of practice what they preach, so to speak. They would say that certain rules or certain operating procedures or certain just methods of going about things, they would say it, but they would never do it. And I didn't like how that made me feel kind of back then when I was experiencing these things. So it's one of those things where I just made a cognitive effort to make sure that I am doing and incorporate into my leadership style. And as you know, there's several different leadership styles out here, but this has been wonderful for me in my leadership journey here.
So what do you see as the key difference in showing up as this kind of a leader?
I think that you're going to get more buy-in. You can get more buy-in because just like with anything, you know, when we are even growing up with your parents or stuff like that, or maybe older mentors or things like that, it's one thing to listen to what they say, but you're watching what they do. You know, if your parents are saying, hey, it's important for you not to spend more than you make, and they're constantly doing just that, you can either take away from that the repercussions, kind of like what happens of the activity, and think that, hey, I'm going to go in the opposite way because I saw how destructive that was. Or you just end up incorporating those habits because of naturally or subconsciously, it's just what you've seen them do. So I think that it's easier for staff too, when you're with staff, for them to know the method behind the madness, so to speak, when you're actually doing it versus just saying it. You know, people say, oh, you know, don't do this after a certain hour, or I want you to show up for certain hours. Let's go over that. Let's say, hey, I want you to show up on Friday and I need you to work till 8. Let's say that you get off at 5. I need you to work till 8. You just say, you know what? I'm a team player. And they give you this whole team player spiel. I'm a team player. I'm going to show up. You're in there and it's a ghost town in there. It's only you and maybe two other people in there. And the person that told you to be in there is nowhere to be found. Mm-hmm. They're with their family hanging out.
They're on vacation. What do you mean hanging out? They're not home. They're on vacation.
That's why they needed you there, you know, so that you can cover them. And I feel like people will respect you more when they feel like you're actually taking part in the things that you discuss and want them to do.
It's so interesting because the thing that comes to mind for me is in a company I worked for, it was we would have leaders who would send emails at like midnight, 1 o'clock, weekends, holidays, vacations. And occasionally they would say things like, not often. Some of them were like, if I'm doing it, you're doing it. But then you had other people who would say, hey, just because I do this doesn't mean I expect you to do it. But going back to what you're saying is somewhere along the lines, that's reinforced behavior. So, you know, one of the comments that I've gotten from mentees is like, well, I'm going to do what they're doing because that's how they got to where they are. And so even though you're telling me don't do that, well, clearly it worked for them. So like they got promoted. And so in a weird way, it's what I think about the do as I do leadership is not only are you setting an example, but you're also showing that behavior is reinforced by you being in leadership in the first place, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely.
Because I mean, that's a hard argument to make of like, well, you know, is that the culture? Is that really what's reinforced at the level above? Yeah, that leader may say, don't do it. But if the leader level above you says, no, you have to be on whenever we want you to be on. I mean, I had a leader who was trying to call me during my grandmother's funeral because he felt it was, he had an important question. He clearly had no boundaries, right? So, you know, for him, he was very clear. And I understood that was a do as I do because he had no boundaries. He expected me not to have boundaries. So at least, you know, I knew what I was getting. But where I think it gets really murky is when you have somebody who says, do this, but then they don't do it themselves. And I think it just sends really mixed messages to people.
I totally agree. And one of the things too that I've been cognizant of growing up and watching from a career perspective and watching other leaders is you don't ever know why somebody's promoted. And in my particular cases that I've seen, a lot of them have just been tenure based. They haven't been performance based. They've just been like, well, this person, I literally had one promotion, one guy I know who got promoted, literally because Kim, other departments did not want him in their department. So they promoted him in our department because they didn't want him in theirs. And they were like, well, he's been here for almost 10 years. We got to put him somewhere. And they put him with us. And we knew immediately he was not qualified. So we have to be careful about seeing somebody in a certain position, whether it's an economic position or a leadership position, and trying to figure out how they got there. Because unless you walked in their shoes, you don't really know how they got that job.
But when you think about it from a behavior standpoint, right? Like that's a leader. People look up to leaders. And you somewhere the chain of logic applies of if I want to be a leader, there I should probably emulate that.
For sure.
Or things in that. So whether how they got there is not necessarily as important, but it's more of that's valuable to somebody. Like they kept that gentleman for some reason.
They did. He's a nice guy too. I'm not knocking him. I'm not going to say his name, but he was a nice guy.
But you're sending a message, right? So he was not technically proficient. He probably, according to you, he really wasn't qualified for that job.
No, dude. It would laugh. It was funny to us when he even came over. It was hilarious.
Well, and that's the thing is like, well, what message does it send to everybody else? Like, well, to get promoted here, you really don't need to know anything.
Just stand around for 10 years and it could happen for you.
Oh my God. That's so demotivating. Think about it. So in that company that you work for, like, how did that affect the engagement? How did that affect how people felt about that company?
I think that it makes you question the decision making of others, yeah, for sure, because it makes you question the leader over them's decision making. So in this particular case, maybe the operations manager, general manager, something like that, you question their decision making because they put this person in position who doesn't know what they're doing. Nice person, and they have been around for 10 years, but it'd be like taking somebody's been around 10 years in accounting and putting them in sales, putting them in a leadership role in sales, like as if they're the same job. You know, they're very different jobs, even if you've been around for a decade, you know. So it went exactly as you would expect. I feel like him being a nice guy kind of helped, but we kind of just did what we wanted to do because he didn't know what he was doing.
Oh, that could go so wrong on so many different levels. We just did whatever we wanted and he didn't know.
Oh. Yeah, he was, I mean, he was a president, but we would be like, he just didn't know. It wasn't really fair to him in that sense. Yeah. And, but like I said too, I think what did help him and what could be a great leadership skill is not coming in and acting like, you know, he didn't even pretend like he did. So that actually helped him versus him coming in and acting as if he did know what he was doing would have probably backfired because you genuinely didn't. So it actually helped that he was a friendly guy. And that I think that he got by more on his emotional intelligence, kind of got him through there.
So one of the things that I think in this is thought that came to me when you were talking earlier, but just what you said is super pivotal, is for me, every leader I have ever had, I have walked away, even like regardless of if they were great, they were terrible, I've walked away with something that I would want to emulate. Like something that I respected and I was like, wow, that's a skill I could leverage. I should grow. I should, you know, figure out how to get better at that. And equally, there was usually always some element of that is not something I would ever want to perpetuate. That's not something I'd want to do to somebody else. That's not a skill or a behavior that I find that I like in a leader. And so for that, even in that case, right, you're sitting here and you're like, he's a nice guy. He's got great emotional intelligence. Like he didn't try to pretend. He didn't follow the fake it till you make it motto.
Yeah.
Like so even in this moment, and when you're talking about do as I do, that guy actually showed up as a pretty good example of when in a situation that you don't have control, mm-hmm, how would you want someone to show up?
You know, it's interesting because I think that one of the first thing you have to do is genuinely show up and be transparent about, mm-hmm, what your how much knowledge you may have in that field or whatever you're doing, and let people know that you're willing to learn. You're willing to you're not just going to come here and just try to dictate because you don't really know. You're working with people who have worked in these departments, no matter where that department may be, a lot longer than you. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that leaders can learn. I feel like I'm in a leadership role and I feel like I learn all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I do feel like you can come in and learn from people. Just because you may be in a management or supervisor role doesn't mean that you cannot learn from other human beings. Everybody's good at different things, Kimberly, right? So mm-hmm, I feel like I can learn a lot from people in other areas. You know, I might be good at a few things, but there's so much more that we can learn. And he never really, he didn't really shy away from that.
So when you think about yourself as a leader, have you ever caught yourself not living by the motto of do as I do?
Not really, because I'm so passionate about it. It's like, you know, I feel like we all have certain things, right, that really, mm-hmm, just, you know, grind us, so to speak. And that was one of the things. So that was one of the things where it was two things, actually. That was one. And another thing is I want it to be a hard, I'm managed for hard workers. So I'm a hard worker manager. If you come in and you apply yourself and you're working hard, you're going to love working with me. If you're coming in and you're more like a slacker, because I was a hard worker who worked with slackers and management would just let them get away with murder. And it used to kill us. It'd kill our morale. Like this person's not pulling their weight, you know? So those were issues that, two things that I really keyed in on, that when I became, you know, leadership, I'm going to be the first one out there. If I'm going to tell them to do something, I'm going to be the first one out there to do it. I'm going to lead by that example. And you'd be surprised how much better things are. People kind of fall into line because you can hold people to a certain level of accountability when you're doing it yourself. You could say, hey, well, I'm actually out here doing it. If there's a reason that you may not want to do it, we could discuss it. I'm not like a tyrant. I'm not like a, you're going to do this or else. I've never been that guy. And I've never had to be that guy to get things done. But it's a situation where when you are actually doing it yourself and they see you doing it yourself, they're kind of doing that math in their head. Like, well, if this guy's out there, like, what excuse do I have? You know?
So I'm going to fess up. Like, I struggled with that. I'll give you a story. And so it wasn't so much that I wouldn't jump in and do the work. That was never a question. It was setting the boundaries of taking care of myself. So here's a story. And this was actually a huge moment for me. So I had, this is so embarrassing. So I had a small team and we were always under the gun for crazy deliverables. And so, so there was always a lot of work happening and there was a lot of things happening. And I had gotten like some cold or like a cough or something. And I, you just muscle through, like you pop a lozenge, you pop some medicine, you show up, you go to work, obviously pre-COVID. Because now you cough in an office setting and I think everybody has a minor panic attack. Clearly pre-COVID. And so I don't remember what it was, but anyway, so my leader at the time, calls me into my office and she sits down and I'm like, what is going on? Like, I'm so confused. And she said, Kim, how many days have you been sick? And I said, I don't know. She's like, no, I want you to sit down and I want you to look at your calendar. How long have you been sick? And I had to embarrassingly count. It was like 8 days. I had been coughing and sick. Oh yeah. It was sad that I didn't realize how badly, like how long I had been that sick. And then she said, she's like, okay. She's like, if this were one of your team members, what would you tell them to do? And it was like, she almost took on like a kindergarten teacher tone with me. And I was like, cause now I knew it was like, I said, well, I would tell them that they need to close their laptop and they need to go to urgent care or something. Yes, and they need to go take care of themselves. And she's like, So what kind of example are we setting right now for your team by you going this long without doing that? And I was like, well, not a good one. And so she says, so what are we going to do now? What are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go to urgent care. And she's like, and so as I start to pack up, she's like, oh no, the laptop stays here. She's like, close the laptop. She's like, you can come back tomorrow, but for the rest of the day, if I see you sending emails, she's like, no. And it was like a humbling moment because I always considered myself a good leader. And I was like, I will do anything. I will jump in, exactly what you're talking about. But it took that moment for me to realize that it wasn't just getting the work done. It was also in how was I taking care of myself? Was I the one sending emails, like taking text messages while I was on vacation? When the truth was, I didn't have to because the team could cover it. But I will never forget that. I remember, I still tell that story. And even now, like, I'm very mindful of, okay, I feel a certain way. Do I need to take time off? But again, she was absolutely right. I was like a mama hen with them. And anytime they get sick, I would send them home. But I wasn't doing it for myself. And so I was that leader that I was referring to. I was saying, no, you have the freedom to go do this. But yet the example I was setting was one that was very different. And I think secretly my team was so grateful I left. I just didn't notice how sick I was because I was so buried in the work. So I'm just putting that out there that it doesn't always have to be about, are you doing the work too? But also, are you, like, when we say work-life balance, when we say self-care, those are great buzz phrases, but are you actually, is that another place where you're do as I do leadership? versus creating a standard for yourself that's not the same for your team. I think that's incredibly important to model in that space as well.
You bring up a solid point, and one that I feel like if you're a leader that cares about either what you're doing or who you're doing it with, mm-hmm. you're going to struggle with that. Because mm-hmm. the first job we feel like we have to do is be present, right? That's the first thing we've got. We got to be present. Storm, snow, rain, heat, sleet, it doesn't matter. Hell, we have to be present. And I've always prided myself on that. And it's so funny that you bring this story up because I got told that 3 weeks ago. I'm trying to think of the actual time.
This was, at least for me, this was like 5 years ago.
Yes, this happened to me 3 weeks ago. I was going to miss a meeting, and I asked because I was scheduled to work an event the same day, and I was going to miss because we have meetings twice a week. And I, after like 4 or 5 days, I was called in. And I spoke to my boss, and I told her, well, I'm going to just skip out on this meeting. I'm not feeling great, but I'll be there for the event. And she was like, it's been like 5 days. Like, maybe you should go to urgent care. You know what? I'm going to urgent care. I went the next day.
Oh,
but
my God.
Sometimes you need people to tell you stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
It's hard because from a do as I say or do as I do standpoint, you always want to like, you're the hardest working person here. I'm here. Mm-hmm. I'm available. I'm on time. I'm punctual. I'm here for my teammates if they need me for emotional support or for actual support in other ways. But you can't do any of that if you're barely upright, right? Like if you're...
Well, and it's funny. So a prior episode, I was talking with Angela Tate about servant leadership and this idea that, you know, the ideal leader you want is who is a servant leader, who is there to serve and grow the people around them. It's not like a power dynamic. And one of the things we talk about so importantly is the only way you can show up and serve others is if you actually are taking care of yourself. And do you know what your boundaries are? But I think it's hard. I mean, you know, I think about that. Like when you have teams, like you are so focused on if you're a good leader, you're very focused on what is my team getting what they need. And, you know, she made an analogy even to parenting about like, you get so focused on trying to take care of other people that you forget that your name should be on that list too. So for anybody listening, don't feel bad. You're not alone. That's why this is called We've All Done It. again, wanting people to feel seen, understood. But for you, in that moment, clearly you were not following your own mantra, right? If people are like checking you. So how do you get more mindful? What do you do to be more mindful of, am I following my mantra in all aspects of my leadership?
It's hard in that sense because I don't really ever, when I'm thinking about leadership, from my perspective, it's only team focused. I'm not including myself in there, you know? So in order to take that step back, you have to kind of step outside of yourself and then look at the whole situation. For me, I was just like, it's a little cough. I'm going to come in. I'm going to do what I got to do. You know, I'm always there for my team. I'm not going to sit at home while my team is out there doing whatever they're doing. And, you know, you think that, right? And it's funny because if my boss had never said that, Kim, like just, I've probably been there getting all kinds of people sick. I mean, who knows? I mean, it's something I just didn't think about up to that point because I just think about just the job, you know, whatever it takes to get a certain job done and to make sure my teammates feel like they are able to execute to the best of their abilities. And I'm giving them everything to do so. And that's all I'm thinking about usually at the time. It's rare. I've had an event where I got cut on my hand and they had to send me home. They were like, your hand is bleeding. You won't stop. You got to go home. I'm like, no, I only have an hour left. I can get through it. You know, sometimes it takes hindsight, Kimberly, mm-hmm. right? To look back and be like, what was I thinking? Like my hand was bleeding. They could have did it that last hour without me, but I'm like, no, I got to be here with them and I got to know, do this to the end. I'm staying to the end of the day. I'm going to be the last person to leave type thing, you know, because you get so used to doing that. But I do think that it probably does help to try to, and I know it could be difficult because it's difficult for me, to try to step outside of yourself and look at yourself and see if you're actually doing what's best for everybody, and showing up sick or not taking care of yourself, even from just a mental health standpoint, Kimberly, because sometimes people just need a mental health day, right? Sometimes it's not even a sickness. Sometimes you just need a mental health day, and being able to take those that time for yourself is beneficial to others, but that's been a learning process because I'm so like, I gotta be there. I gotta be first one in, last one out types, you know, all the stuff that you say.
Well, and it's so funny because I coach, I mentor to the whole idea that you can't serve from an empty vessel. And it's this thing of when you're on the plane and they're like, you know, the mask goes on you first. Like, don't put the mask on your team first. You got to put the mask on you first, because if you aren't okay, if you aren't, and not even 100%, I mean, I don't think anybody shows up on any day actually 100%.
Yes.
But like, if you're not showing up as the best you can on that day, then you're not serving anybody. You're not helping anybody. And to your point, am I making people sick? Am I slowing down the process? You know, if I am not in the right headspace, I could actually derail what we're doing simply by me being my not so great self. And so for me, and I'm not saying I have it right, but I think it's always coming back to asking the question, like, where am I on the list? And I've got to make sure I'm towards the top. So, and then again, it's not saying that I'm not going to not show up and do what needs to be done for my team, but also asking, like, how do you feel today? Are you okay? And if I am not feeling well, like gut checking, like, how long have I not felt well? Because again, it's that whole concept of not being present with yourself. Like, especially if you're so externally focused, it's easy to neglect aches, pains. You know, I think about somebody I used to work with, and she used to talk about the fact that she had headaches constantly, chronic headaches. And she ended up leaving the company and going to another role. And we were chatting, and she said, you know, what was shocking to me? She said, I looked in my bag and I realized I didn't have to go buy ibuprofen because I hadn't had a headache in changing. So like, she wasn't even aware that the role she was in was so stressful for her that she was popping them like Tic Tacs just to get through a day. And it took her changing jobs to even realize it. So it's like those kinds of things. How do you become more aware of how you are showing up? I think this is where, you know, I used to advise this, and I tried to do this with my team as well too, as best you can, but you have to have the right relationship, is to allow people to challenge you a little bit be able to call you on it and be like, that's a lot of blood coming from your hand, Reggie.
That's exactly what happened.
Can you just go? Because the blood is freaking people out. Like that, but feeling, you have to have that relationship where your team can say, you know, I still wondered, like, did someone on my team go tell my boss, like, hey, Kim is a walking mess.
You need to talk to her.
Can somebody go talk to her? And it was so funny because I ended up on like a ton of antibiotics and I was sick. I was really sick. But I'm grateful that somebody stopped me and forced me to see myself differently. Because I definitely was in my own little fog of go do, and not necessarily. And again, you're not showing up as the leader you want to be. You just don't even realize it in the moment. So.
Yeah, it's difficult. And I think you bring up a solid point that I don't feel like can be glossed over. And that's creating an environment where your team feels comfortable to speak to you. And I don't look at that as any different, even though there is different dynamics than creating an environment where my daughter feels comfortable telling me anything. Is you create an environment where your teammates feel comfortable telling you anything. Other, because it's not like a lot of times we know any of these places we work at, they're telling each other. You know, they might not be making it to you, but they're talking amongst themselves. So you want to be privy to those conversations. And if you, only way I feel like I can be privy to those conversations is creating an environment where somebody doesn't feel like that kind of behavior will be punitive or be, they'll be disciplined for it, or I'll snap at them. You know, how dare you question anything? I want all the questions. You know, I want all of the, I feel like if you are a leader of other strong people who are leaders themselves, then you should be able to stress test your perspectives and opinions and not feel so, and not feel insecure about that. You know, if you feel like you have a solid point, defend your point. And if somebody else comes up with a better one, I'm very quick to move off my original point. If somebody presents a better one, I'm out of here. That point's out of here. You know, yeah. So, but I feel like that comes with the environment that you set. That's why I love being in leadership so much, because I've been able to set a certain environment for me and my teammates to where we're all on equal footing here. I'm going to make the final decision, but I'm a big consensus guy. I'm going to really listen to different perspectives and stress test my own perspectives, my own preconceived notions to see if it is it the right way or is it not. And I believe that you can also benefit from that as well, hugely in your career.
Well, as we are rounding out our little conversation, if there were one piece of advice you'd want to give our listeners out there, what is the one thing you'd want to leave them with?
The one thing I'd want to leave them with, one piece of advice. I would say to, if you're not in a leadership perspective, if you're not, or if you're not in a leadership position, I should say, the one thing I would say is to pay attention to what you may want to later on in life, because everything doesn't happen right then. You may be at a lower level right now, and in the sense of the company, not as a human being, because I believe there's always intrinsic value for a human being. So you're not as a human being, but maybe you might not be in any company where you want to be. It might not even be at this company. Maybe you're going to go someplace else. Listen to your gut about where you want to be. Like, listen to where you want to be. So if you are having, there's got to be leaderships around you somewhere, right? We all have leaders we've dealt with from, you know, point A to point B in our careers. Be cognizant of that. Take what you want to keep from them and bottle it up, so that when it's your chance to affect, you know, people the way that you want to affect them, you still have that there. Because that's something that's possible for every human being to do. Like, even if you aren't where you want to be today and you see somebody who is, you can take things that you want to take from them. And one day it could be 10 or 15 years down the line, you'll be able to action that. And because that's how it happened for me.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And I also think apply what you can today. So of the things you see and you like, you don't have to have some title to show up as a leader in your life, in your work. You know, how can you start applying things so that it becomes who you naturally are? So again, once you get to that leadership, that titled place, it's now just who you are. It's not like you have to, it's a checklist. It's just how you view and approach life. I think that's really critical. That's really great advice. So I really enjoyed our conversation. I'm so grateful that you have joined us to talk about this, because this is so interesting, because I think we all have great intentions of showing up as these amazing people. And sometimes even the best of us miss the mark, and that's okay. It all comes back to what is your intention and how do you continue to grow and evolve to continue to try to be that leader we all want to be. So we're going to have it in the show notes, but if for people who want to know more about you, where is the one place that they should definitely go check you out?
Check me out at reginatl.com. And you could also look for Reg and ATL, the show, on all the streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher. But all that is at reginatl.com. If you make it over there, there's a lot of different links and stuff there.
Awesome. Like I said, all of this will be in the show notes, so you can learn all about him, and we'll have his bio and all the fun stuff. So thank you so much, Reggie. I really appreciate you having us. You have coming on the show with us.
Oh, absolutely. Always amazing. It was amazing. Our pre-show was amazing. The show was amazing. You're batting 1,000 right now, Kimberly. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me on today's episode of We've All Done It. I know your time is valuable. That's why I am for as little BS as possible. Hopefully today's episode has sparked some new ideas for you. If you would like to learn more about the We've All Done It Leadership Framework or how to work with me, please check out my website at KimberlyJBenoit.com. Until next time.